Hello everyone, and welcome to the third episode, or no, fourth episode now, of season two of the Travel and Culture podcast. Today I am joined by two lovely ladies who are going to talk to us about a few East African countries. It's not just one today, you're going to learn about three. So, do you want to start by introducing yourself and the countries you're going to talk about? And then Raisa, you can introduce yourself too.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So my name is Salwa, and I am Kenyan Somali. So Somalis that have migrated to Kenya over the years due to the war and things like that. So I'll be talking about Somalia. Okay, mostly Somaliland, because Somalia has been split into Somalia and Somaliland. I might talk about that a bit. And then Kenya, because I live in Kenya and my parents are born in Kenya, my grandparents are born in Kenya. So yeah.
Cool, thank you. Raisa?
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Raisa, and I'm a final year law student and from a little country in the heart of Africa called Rwanda. And I'll be talking about Rwanda.
Cool, thank you very much. So as you can hear, we're going to was talking about a lot of the first question I'd like to ask you both, which I ask most people, is what is your favorite thing about the country or countries you're going to be talking about today? It could be, culture, scenery, food, or anything. What is your favorite thing about that place? So what?
Okay, for Kenya, I think I'll say the maybe the culture. So Kenya has a lot of different tribes. There are 40, okay, about 45 tribes, give or take a few, because some are added and deducted from the list every now and then. So because there are so many different tribes, there are so many different like individual cultures and foods and languages. But I think despite all of that, there is still a sense of like common denominators and things that all Kenyans like kind of do. And we all speak Swahili, for example. So I like that despite all of the little cultural differences and different language and things, we still have like common denominators and things that we can have in common. So I'm from Somaliland, but so in Somaliland, it's a big sense of community. So everyone kind of, as soon as someone knows you're Somali, and if they know you're a Somalilander, there's a lot of like, okay, we're immediately family, which I really do like. I think that's, it makes you feel like at home no matter where you are.
Yeah, and do you find that support really useful then? So for when you are, say, like in the UK, do you find the support of people who are also from Somaliland? Does that help you?
Yeah, even people that are from Kenya, obviously I'm in the East African Society, and I had joined the Somali Society in first year as well, and I did find that especially with East Africans, in general, you do always feel at home with East Africans. Like there is always like a sense of community. So I walk around with my Kenyan bracelet on my wrist, and I'm always like dragged. Like someone grabs your arm and is like, "Oh my God, you're from Kenya!" It used to happen a lot in like first and second year. Just randomly on a night out, someone would just grab your arm and be like, "Oh my God, you're Kenyan!" I'm like,
That's
"Yeah."
so cool.
But, yeah.
Raisa, what's your favorite thing?
Actually had the same thing down about the community, and I guess it's really part of East Africa, like you were saying. Although I think Rwanda has a kind of different take on it because of the history, but I found it's a very close-knit society in the sense of like I feel like personally in my family it really takes a family to raise a child, a tribe, the whole tribe, everyone's involved, and that's one of the things I miss when like I'm away from home. But just to add something different, the weather
Yeah.
as well. I miss the weather.
Yeah, I can imagine coming to England, you don't really, yeah, I mean, I've never lived anywhere else, but even I complain about the weather all the time, saying it's always too cold, because it's horrible. But it's funny you've both mentioned community, because last week I interviewed some people from Sudan, and I've also interviewed someone from Ghana, and basically anyone I've actually interviewed from Africa has said how community is so, so important, how family, tribes, supporting each other is so important. And generally when I've spoken to people from like Europe, or I've got a friend from Hong Kong, there's not the same emphasis on helping each other and that importance. And I was just wondering, and I know this is obviously Africa's a huge continent, I don't want to generalize about every single country, but do you think there's something there that makes people really value each other? Do you know maybe what that is and why we potentially don't have it elsewhere, say in Europe?
I feel like a lot of African cultures stem from religion. That's a generalization, but a lot of the ones that I'm aware of, and because of that, a lot of religions do emphasize on like a more like cultural community being built, like a community being built within the religion. So for example, for Somalis are like 99.9% of Somalis are Muslim. And the culture is kind of one of those Islamic cultures. So it's, the religion is so embedded into the culture that it's part of the culture. And because of that, a lot of the things, so considering everyone family and like respecting your elders and calling elders you don't know words that mean like uncle and auntie and things like that, even that applies to like all kinds of African cultures. You call everyone like auntie and uncle. And I think a lot of that stems from influences from religion and like religious contexts.
That's interesting, because I suppose speaking to people from Europe and purely based on culture in the UK, we're nowhere near as religious as we used to be, and I think a lot of people have commented on how the UK is quite individualistic, so maybe that's why.
I just wanted to add just to what Sal was saying. I think it depends on the religion, but I think the importance that's given to the elders is very important personally, because now you have cousins and their friends, like your grandparents' friends, and you, I don't know how to explain this, you kind of create a wider community because of the work that's given to them, which is, I guess, in the sense how it becomes a whole like, community type thing.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. It's, yeah, there's such a disparity between how we treat, I mean, we don't even use the word elders in the UK, which is old people, which is really quite rude in a way, I think, the way it's been used. But it's very interesting to see the differences in respect shown to people. And some questions that I have, this can go sort of both ways, but what were your biggest culture shocks when you first came to Nottingham, or when you first sort of went back to your country, basically both ways, what were the biggest culture shocks you experienced?
So for me, I was born in the UK and then I left the UK when I was 9, and then lived in Kenya until time to come to uni, so until I was about like 17 turning 18, and I thought, because I would come back pretty much every other year, because I've got a lot of family in the UK, and I didn't think I would experience any culture shocks when I came back, but I have experienced so many. And like, I've lived here and I'm still like, what? When so if to go on off on us talking about elders, people expecting, okay, I know when I was younger, I struggled with this too. People expecting me to call like their moms by their first name. I'm not going to call your mom. Like, that's very intense. I can't fathom calling someone's mom by their name. Like, it doesn't sense to me. So because back home, and in either countries, you would call them like Auntie Blank, or in Kenya, so mama obviously means mom, so you'd be like mama and then their eldest son, or like eldest child. Or if I know Raisa, I would call her mom Mama Raisa. So
I see, yeah,
because it's obviously it's like a sign of respect. So when I'm here and someone introduces me and is like, oh, this is my mom Jill, and I'm like, what do I call her? And I can't, obviously it's, there are certain cultures that understand that. So for example, a lot of like Indian, Pakistani cultures like that, like where there's, I guess, where religious culture, like where there's Islamic context, a lot of them understand being called auntie. So like, I'm okay with calling, they're okay with me calling them auntie. But a lot of people just find it strange and they just want me to call them Jill. And I can't. I just don't call your mom anything. I just wait until she looks at me and then I say something. But that's a big.
Oh my gosh.
I definitely agree.
That didn't even cross my mind. I mean, I didn't know what you're going to say anyway, but just names that, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. So I just have to wait until I'm like, preferred to. I don't want to call your mom by her first name. It's very cool.
Yeah, I can imagine. Raisa, do you have any really big culture shocks?
My one was, because Rwandans are friendly when you get to know them, but initially we're kind of reserved. So it was kind of crazy to me in first year when I was being told I had to choose who I was going to live with next year in November. Like, I just met you. How do I know now that I want to live with you? Yeah, so that was one of, you know, how quickly people create close bonds in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I think UK, I think this is maybe a difference between like the idea of community that you guys seem to experience and the UK, which seems a bit more cliquey. It's less sort of, I think it's people just sticking together because they kind of have to, especially at UK, like, sorry, at university culture, you kind of feel like you have to cling on to people a bit sometimes. It's weird.
It's
so you were explaining, you were saying how there are lots of different, in Kenya there's lots of different tribes, about 45.
Yeah.
What are the main differences between the tribes? I mean, there are lots of sort of individual ones, but where are the differences between the tribes?
With certain tribes, the differences are that their roots stem in different countries. I'm not going to name any specific ones just in case I get them wrong, but I do know that certain tribes were originally from Uganda or originally from like places that aren't Kenya, as in originally meaning ancestral history, and then they moved to Kenya. And then there's okay, so the main differences are obviously languages, because every tribe has their own language, and I don't want to get political. I feel like it's very easy to get political, which is why a lot of countries would learn and not have a lot of tribal differences. In Kenya, there's a lot of tribalism, but a lot of the differences are that certain tribes have a bigger presence in Kenya, and therefore have more like power and things like that. And certain tribes aren't really considered. So the ones that have been added more recently, for example, when they were adding tribes to the list, they put like Indian Kenyans on the list, because Indian Kenyans have been in Kenya for like 7-8 generations now. And so they added them to the list, but a lot of Kenyans were not happy with that. And a lot of Indian Kenyans weren't happy with that either, because of all this like tribalism and like, it's all about there's also differences in like more lighthearted things like food. There's each tribe has like something different about how they cook something or a different meal altogether. There's a lot of like funny stereotypes associated with different tribes and things like that. But yeah, so there is differences even on, because they translate into how you interact with certain people from different tribes and stuff. Eventually you do kind of learn to pick up on who's from what tribe and things like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of that is not as intense with the like our generation.
Yeah.
Because with the older generation, there was a lot more like, there seems to be a lot more like, yeah, a lot more of that. Every tribe kind of stays with their tribe. But with our generation, what I have seen over the years is it's more like, okay, well, we're all Kenyan and we all speak Swahili, so we're all together.
Yeah. And yeah. And I was actually going to ask, has that changed with newer generations? But obviously you just answered that for me. And another question I had, is tribalism stronger in rural areas compared to urban areas, or does it play in to like urban living and urban society as well? Is there a big disparity or not?
No, there's not much of a big disparity, because a lot of the tribalism takes place within politics.
Okay. I was just going to say, is it almost, I don't know if this is too strong a word to use, but institutionalized?
Kind of, yeah. there's a lot of it that lies within politics, because it will be like certain parties belong to certain tribes and are very like clear about it, and then maybe certain tribes or certain parties will consistently like be in power or like will be in certain roles and things like that, and it kind of trickles down and it becomes like a bit of a like a lot of chaos. We had some very serious post-election violence in 2007 caused by tribalism. And I think then, since then, tribalism is definitely, it's definitely less, but, and I think that's why our generation is less, like, is less intense with it, because we saw the effect, even if we were really young. We know that it's never that serious for us to be, like, fighting against each other because we're from different parts of Kenya or East Africa.
And with, as you said, you know, generations being less tribalist, do you think that will then play into the politics into the coming years, and do you think that will then that will have an effect to make it like reduce the tribalism, or do you think the people in power will still contribute to the tribalism?
Well, I think I'm just fact checking myself on this.
That's fine.
You have to be 35 and older to run for most positions in power, and because of that it will take a very long time before like our generation is running. But I think hopefully by then that there will be differences. It does become less as the years goes on, but yeah, there's a lot of like tribal tension around elections and things like that, and then a lot of it settles through the rest of the year, and it's just shown in like small differences, like, oh, you guys call it that and we call it this instead.
That's really interesting. Do you have anything similar in Rwanda? Do you have any similar experiences?
I do want to get political as well, so
Rwanda, you don't have to take it too political.
So Rwanda is generally a country that's united by one language. We have the same culture and everything. But in the past, there's been a genocide that we've now got past. And when we were young, we weren't even born. Personally, I wasn't even born when that happened. But when you hear the stories of the people who lived through it, and you look at the country we live in right now, I can't imagine it happening. it's crazy to me that it happened. But I think we saw what that could lead to. And I think that's a place no one wants to go back to. So everything is working towards being a united people and, you know, just doing the best as a country.
Yeah, and I spoke to you about this earlier, but this concept of Umuganda, of everyone coming together once a month to help contribute to sort of community projects, help build houses, litter picking. Do you think that that was a product of people understanding?
I can't word
the question properly, but I think, you know, a product of the genocide and people wanting to make a stronger, more united country.
I think that did play a role, because if you're meeting people in your area and you're working together towards like a desired goal, you're less likely to have like issues maybe, or if you did have them, this could be a chance to talk to them and, you know, avoid anything escalating. But also Rwanda is also very big on like being a clean city, so this, the initiative of Umuganda also aids that. And I think internally in your day-to-day life, once you know you take part in like keeping your area clean, you're less likely to litter, you know, you take active efforts in your life not to keep a safe space.
Yeah, when I first read about that concept, it was almost like, why don't we do this? Why doesn't everyone do this? It sounds like such a good idea, just for so many reasons. Just, you know, as you say, for cleanliness, but also community. And I just think it's just such a brilliant way to try and keep people united and together. And this sort of brings me on to my next point. What would you bring from your culture to British culture? What do you think British culture could do with a bit of help with?
That's a difficult question. obviously, the easiest answer would be food.
I've heard that before quite a few times.
And I mean this in the least disrespectful way possible. So when I was younger, I apart from like school cafeteria food, which I don't really remember, I never really had any food outside the house in general, unless I was going to like a restaurant, and then it would be honestly different ethnic food. It wouldn't really just be like gonna have an English breakfast, something like that. And then when I came to uni in first year, I made a lot of like, obviously I was in a self-catered accommodation, so sometimes someone would be like, oh, I've made lunch, and then we'd go like eat. And then one day my friend who's English, she was like, oh, I've made a nice like dinner, and I was like, okay. And the food was so different to everything I've ever experienced. And I was like, I'm thank you for cooking for me because that's lovely. but I don't know what any of this is. And even now I have one of my friends, she's half English, but she grew up with her English family. And we'll get into arguments because I'll be like, bro, I'm not gonna eat that. No, Sal, it's good. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna eat it. Like, you're gonna have to like force me to eat it.
What's one sort of English or British food that you've tried or know of which just sounds really horrendous to you?
I don't even remember the name right now. Okay, it looks like a, how do I even explain it? It's like a pastry, but I don't know how it's made. And you have it with like, what do you put inside it? I don't know, like cranberry and. You have it when you're having like a Christmas dinner. What's it called?
Yorkshire pudding?
Yes, a Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah, I love Yorkshire puddings. Oh, they're brilliant.
Every time I say it to an English person, they're like, what? Yeah, no, I don't want it.
It's not that bad, you know.
I'm okay, I'm good.
Wait.
No, I'm fine. I'm actually fine. If I weigh it against our equivalent of like a bread thing, it's chapati, and nothing competes with chapati. Like,
true.
Chapatis are, you can eat a chapati for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a snack.
So what is a chapati?
So chapatis are actually of Southeast Asian origin, but a lot of East African food has influences from like different parts of the world because of things like trade and all of that. So chapatis are, okay, the easiest way to describe it, they're like a naan bread, but made differently. And they're delicious. yeah, chapatis are top two and they're not two. So whenever I've had a period, whenever I've had a Yorkshire pudding, and I've tried. I think I'm very open-minded when it comes to food. But I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not on it. Like this, I'm just not on it. I just don't understand. Also, I don't. Yeah, a lot of the Christmas dinner foods, I have to be like, because my friend invited me for Christmas dinner around at hers, and I've really had to like put a brave face on and be like, you can do this. All. I would bring like good food, different like cultural spices and like things like that.
Yeah, I think we could do with. I'll admit to that, hand on heart, we do need some more spices in our food. It is very bland. Not that I can handle anything, but like anything like that. But yeah, I would agree with you on that one. I can't agree with the Yorkshire puddings because they are honestly the best thing ever. But you know what? I'll accept your opinion. I'll accept your opinion. It's fine. It's fine.
But spices don't even have to be things that are spicy.
True. True, yeah. But yeah, I'm so used to eating bland food. Honestly, I've just become conditioned to plain meat and veg. It's awful. Oh gosh. Raisa, do you have anything that you would contribute to British culture? You can also say food.
Yeah. About food, I didn't get the question.
What else? What would you bring from Rwandan culture to British culture, just to improve it or make it better in any way, in your opinion?
I'll continue with like the food, we have something called isombe, which is kind of like derived, I think, from Congo. Pundu. I don't know if you guys have heard of pundu. So it's like cassava leaves cooked in like palm oil and like maybe peanuts. It's beautiful with like rice and plantains. So these different foods, agatogo, which is like a mixture of, like a mixture of different foods. You can have either potatoes or some sort of banana called igitoki. And then you have peanut sauce and like peas, everything just mixed together.
That sounds really good.
Oh wait, can I add something on food from Somalia, because I really haven't spoken about. I would change English tea and just make it like, so basically in Somalia and in some other cultures, we cook our tea. So you will put like tea in like a pot. And you'll put like the water and the tea and like some ginger, and then when it starts to boil, you'll add like milk and things, and then you'll add spices. So in Somali, spices are called hawash, and you'll add like tea spices, so like tea masala and things like cardamom and things like, can't think of any of the ones, cloves, like a bunch of like tea spices, and cinnamon. And then you'll like cook the tea until it bubbles and boils, and it like starts to rise, and then it's normally like very nice. So I think English tea needs a vamp. Although I do find myself making English tea a lot more often because it's so efficient, because you just have to like put the kettle on, put the tea bag in. Mm-hmm. Like it's a lot quicker than cooking tea. Somali food is also very like, we have okay, a lot of people are familiar with Ethiopian, like, injera. So we have anchara, which is, like, it's basically like a fermented pancake. And we have it with, I don't know if you're familiar with ghee. Ghee is, like, okay.
I've heard of it, yeah.
The word is, it's like, it's like butter, but what's the difference between it's clarified butter. And it's a lot thicker and a lot stronger. So we'll have are like pancakes in the morning with like ghee and then some sugar sprinkled on top, and then some
that sounds so good.
And you have to make it like the day before, a few days before, because it needs time to, like, you have to, like, hand whip it for, like, a good 30 minutes. Like, it's a process. And in general, I think for Somali food, there's a lot of, like, mixtures of sweet and sour things. So we'll have, like, bananas with, like, rice and meat to balance out, like, the sweet and savory, and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that food all sounds really delicious, to be fair. I would definitely like to try some of that. And that tea, as a non-tea drinker, I'm still very intrigued. I'd love to see it being made as well. That sounds really cool.
It's really nice.
I think that's all we have time for today. Is there anything that either of you would like to add?
I just wanted to plug Rwanda. It's one of the best tourist destinations, and I feel like everyone should visit Rwanda once in their life.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like there are forests, there's a gorilla, there's a volcanic area with gorillas, if you want to see gorillas. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you both for coming on. It's so fascinating to just learn about other people and other cultures and how we're all so different, yet also actually kind of similar in a way. So yeah, thank you both for coming on, and thank you everyone for listening in today. Yeah, I hope you all have a really good day and really enjoyed the podcast. And thank you again, Raisa and Salwa, for coming on and speaking to us.
Thank you.